From the St. Louis Public Radio Newsroom, this is The Gateway. It's Wednesday, October 15th. I'm Abby Larico. Data center developers boast bringing jobs and investment to the communities that approve them, but they can also be a boon for utility companies.
And these utility companies could invest and build more infrastructure, and then they're allowed to pass that cost onto the consumer.
STLPR's Kayvon Mansouri has been all over this topic for us. His conversation about the pros and cons of data centers with an expert at Washington University. That's coming up after this news on The Gateway. St. Louis Sheriff Alfred Montgomery is headed to jail. U.S. Marshals arrested the sheriff Tuesday afternoon after a hearing on federal felony charges involving witness tampering. The hearing included allegations and testimony that the sheriff had a secret burner phone and misreported how many guns he had. He was also alleged to have said he would knock someone out. Justin Gelfand is a lawyer for Montgomery. He says the ruling sets a dangerous precedent for elected officials and that all the evidence wasn't heard.
When you put them behind bars without even letting them prove their actual innocence through an appropriate court proceeding, we believe that that's wrong.
But prosecutors said there wasn't a way to effectively monitor Montgomery's communications while out on bond awaiting trial. Lawyers for the sheriff said they will appeal the decision. Montgomery's second-in-command is now in charge of the daily operations of the sheriff's office, while Missouri's attorney general says she's confident she can convince a judge to oust the sheriff. STLPR's Jason Rosenbaum has more on the case that Catherine Hanaway is pushing to remove the city official.
After he was indicted on felony witness retaliation and witness tampering charges last week, Hanaway unsuccessfully pushed for Montgomery to be removed from office. Retired St. Louis Judge Stephen Omer said there needed to be a trial before he could decide whether to oust Montgomery. Hanaway says that's understandable and adds she believes her office will prevail.
He's abusing his power by using it to sort of enhance himself. And on the other side of the ledger, he's not doing the job.
Hanaway contends Montgomery is neglecting his office for refusing to transport prisoners for medical care. Although Montgomery has said he's under no obligation to perform that service, a different judge ordered him to transport prisoners. I'm Jason Rosenbaum, St. Louis Public Radio.
City officials, including St. Louis Mayor Kara Spencer, have called on the sheriff to resign. The state of Missouri has carried out its first execution under Governor Mike Kehoe. The Department of Corrections announced shortly before 6:30 p.m. Tuesday that Lance Shockley had been put to death. He was found guilty in the 2005 murder of Missouri State Highway Patrol trooper Carl Dwayne Graham in southern Missouri. Shockley had received the sentence from a Carter County judge after jurors had deadlocked. Shockley had always maintained his innocence. Opponents of the death penalty in this case had urged Kehoe to stay the execution to allow for DNA testing. His attorneys had also argued that the state's failure to allow Shockley's daughter to be in the execution chamber as a spiritual advisor violated his religious rights. The U.S. Supreme Court rejected those arguments and allowed the execution to proceed. Abortions can continue at Planned Parenthood clinics in Missouri, a district appeals court has ruled. Hallie Jackson reports.
The court rejected a request by the Attorney General's office to reinstate restrictions that would have blocked Planned Parenthood locations in Kansas City, St. Louis, and Columbia from offering the procedure. The Western District Court of Appeals said Judge Jerry Jung did not abuse her discretion when she struck down the restrictions earlier this year. It also rejected the Attorney General's argument that the restrictions didn't cause much harm because pregnant Missourians could travel for abortion access. The ruling is temporary and can still be appealed. Plus, Missourians will vote next year whether to ban the procedure. I'm Hallie Jackson.
More than 200 people gathered at the St. Charles City County Library in St. Peter's last night to learn more about the recently expanded Radiation Exposure Compensation Act. St. Louis Public Radio's Lucretia Wimbley reports from the town hall.
State Representative Tricia Burns took questions after a presentation on how to apply for compensation for radiation exposure. Burns says at least 300,000 people are estimated to have been impacted within the 21 eligible Missouri zip codes.
My son had a very rare cancer at 15. That's what started this for me. There's so many people that aren't covered, whether it's their illness or their zip codes. As this goes to expire in 2027, we are going to need more advocates to help fight for those rare cancers.
To apply for compensation, eligible individuals must provide proof of identity, proof of residency, and proof that they developed an illness from radiation exposure. I'm Lucretia Wembley, St. Louis Public Radio.
A St. Louis alderwoman whose ward was devastated by the May 16th tornado says the city needs to do a lot more to get financial resources into the hands of the victims. STLPR's Rachel Lippman has more from Shamim Clark Hubbard's appearance on Politically Speaking.
All eight neighborhoods in the 10th Ward at North and East DeForest Park sustained damage. Two of Clark Hubbard's constituents were killed. She says some of her residents have been able to repair their roofs and move back in, but others are still living in severely storm-damaged buildings or in tents on their property. Clark Hubbard says she's just as frustrated with the slow pace of funding distribution as her constituents.
If we can't do direct payments, maybe do some kind of endowments or low to no interest loans or, you know, with an incentive to stay.
Clark Hubbard says the city also needs to help residents hold on to their land so they are able to rebuild. I'm Rachel Lippman, St. Louis Public Radio.
Community members are discussing ways to protect themselves against a potential influx of ICE agents and National Guard members in St. Louis. St. Louis Public Radio's Andrea Henderson reports on a town hall this week aimed at helping people prepare.
Over the last few days, Jaden Booth of Overland has been in touch with his activist friends in Chicago. He says they've been giving him tips on how to protect his community if more federal agents come to St. Louis. Booth came to the town hall put on by local immigrant advocacy groups to learn how to help people being detained by immigration agents. He says deploying more federal agents to the city will not reduce crime over time.
I believe that the over-policing of our communities causes more poverty, more crime, and more broken families. So whether that's the National Guard or even our local police, I'm absolutely against it.
Booth says he plans to strategize with his neighbors to create a plan that effectively helps immigrant families in need. I'm Andrea Henderson, St. Louis Public Radio.
St. Charles recently enacted a one-year moratorium on data centers. That was after community pushback on a $1 billion proposal. Now, St. Louis residents are expressing their concerns about a data center proposed for the Armory Building in Midtown. St. Louis Public Radio's Kayvon Mansouri spoke with Oliver Roberts, the co-director of the AI Collaborative at Washington University, about what residents and policymakers should look for in data center projects.
In terms of the economics, I mean, this is something that could be very, very valuable for a state to bring in a big data center. We could take, for example, the data center that Meta just built in northern Kansas City. They brought in a $1 billion investment into the state. They're not only investing in the data center, they're also putting money toward things like KC STEM Alliance. They claim that there were 1,500 construction jobs created to build that data center. They say that once it's fully operational, there'll be 100 full-time staff members there. So you could see money flowing into the state could be highly valuable. You could see the job creation. But with that said, you also have to look at what tax abatements, what tax incentives were given to Meta to get them into the state. And oftentimes that's not publicly disclosed. A lot of this is under NDAs, that is the data centers as well, the data center building companies, as well as utility companies entering into deals and giving certain preferential treatment on utilities, giving certain tax abatements. So it's tough to see the full economic picture, given that a lot of it is not publicly disclosed.
And just to go back, were you saying that some incentives like won't even be, like the public won't be aware? We've become sort of pretty aware of these NDAs, especially with the St. Charles development out there. But is it possible that some tax abatements incentives won't even be in the public eye?
What I mean by that is more so not the official tax, but the utility companies will actually incentivize data centers to come into their region because it adds to the energy demand. And then what happens there is there's an increase in energy demand, costs go up, and oftentimes this cost gets passed on to the consumer because there's an NDA over this special agreement between the data center builders who are using this increased demand and the utility companies. And why the utility companies obviously want data centers in their region is, one, there's an increase in the amount of energy they need to produce, so more money for them. And two, there's now a need to invest in more infrastructure. And these utility companies could invest and build more infrastructure, and then they're allowed to pass that cost onto the consumer, usually in the form of a service fee that shows up in a utility bill. So there's a big benefit for utility companies to have data centers in their region. And this is more of an unseen tax per se on the actual end consumer, which is the taxpayer in these states.
I guess, you know, if you had to sort of sum up what to expect if a data center is kind of coming to town, what would you tell them to prepare for, expect when this is happening?
So first, you need to really assess how big is this data center? What is the actual strain on the electric grid going to be? What is the water demand? And then once you look at that, that will kind of tell you like how significant of a project, how many community issues will this raise? Second, you could also pay attention to the economics. What type of investment is this data center bringing to the community? Are they also now investing in community projects like the KC STEM Alliance? Are they going to be investing in local schools and infrastructure there? Or are they just building a data center and not committing to the community? So those are some of the things to look at. Proximity to the data center is also very important. In Northern Virginia, huge clusters of data centers, very close to residential areas. If you have a data center pretty far from any houses, a lot less likely to have any issues in terms of that constant humming and noise that causes health issues and nuisance problems. So depending on your proximity to the data center, that will also be a pretty big determinant if you're going to have a lot of community members complaining about that issue.
That was Oliver Roberts, co-director of the AI Collaborative at Washington University, speaking with STLPR's Kayvon Mansouri. Our Brian Moline edited that piece. You can find more of our coverage on the data center issues across our region at stlpr.org. The Gateway is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, a listener-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis, music by Ryan McNeely of Adult Fur. I'm Abby Larico, and from the St. Louis Public Radio newsroom, this has been The Gateway. Have a great day.